Frank, that was a good job. I enjoyed that. And I think I'm actually not far from this historical background idea. Mm-hmm. My question is, though, do we put ourselves, when we're teaching this to our congregations, in danger of, you were talking about Russia and the Russian government and the Russian Orthodox Church, do we put ourselves in danger of stabbing in the dark at that, the same way that we now look back on history and see those who talked about the French Revolution?
I see what you're saying, and yes, it's possible that when we apply the book in our own day, it's not going to be as easy, and we may well make a mistake, but I think what we're going to avoid, as far as your question goes, is will we have the same problems continuous historical? I don't think so, because we are not denying the primary relevance to the first recipients, and therefore the major basic truths that are presented by John in the book of Revelation are going to stand whether or not we make a mistake. Now, the continuous historical viewpoint, for instance, if he makes a mistake, he's got nothing really to fall back on, because he doesn't see any other fulfillment besides the ones that do happen once history is rolling. Now, the historical background, they see fulfillments as history goes along, but they also see the primary meaning that John first gave it. So I'm not sure if that answers your question. I personally haven't been in danger of leading my congregation astray on the teaching of Revelation, but that's not because I presented all the right views. It's because I haven't really preached on it that much. So. Did that answer your question?
First of all, I'd like to say that you have given a very expertise deal on all the views.
Thank you.
The views as given are weak, and that's not on you. That's mm-hmm. the ones who have given those.
Right.
I've written a book on Revelations, put a lot of study in it, and I guess in my book it's a lot different than those views.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like, I don't know if I have any questions to give you, but what I'd like to say is, anyone that reads my book, I'd like to have feedback on what it says, and then I would like to answer their questions.
Well, I intend to get your book. I've already hit Alan up for the money, so
okay.
I almost should have it before I leave today.
Okay. So that's all I've got to say.
Thank you.
Frank, I think I think you did a good job in looking over all of these. And I wrote down several notes, and I'll go through them pretty quickly, but the futurist school, one thing people need to be aware of is they tout themselves on being literal in their applications. In fact, you can read quotation after quotation that everything in prophecy is absolutely literal. And then when you get one of their books and start going through it, it's amazing how many things turn out to be figurative. And in fact, they take one another to task and blast one another for being figurative in one place or another, and then the next guy turns around and blasts the first for the same kind of thing. But the literalistic idea will not hold up, and they can't even make it hold up themselves. And there really is not anything to recommend that view.
There's no way to hold a literal view of a dragon that knocks the stars out of the sky.
Right. The continuous historical view, I also thought it was kind of weak because of the first thing that made me think that was after hearing several presentations by Orville Lee and by Doug Jones and by, I think I heard another one or two when I was growing up as well, these seals and and trumpets and vials have all been pegged to various historical events, and everybody puts themselves on the fifth or sixth vial waiting for the end of time just around the corner, and then lo and behold, it doesn't come. And so every few generations, people go back and they stretch out these things and repeg them to different historical events so they can get up here and be the fifth vial waiting for the end to come. And that's been happening, as I began to read later, since the year 1000, or before the year 1000. Yeah. And any view that has to be done like that seems to me to have some problem with it. And, of course, Peters, you know, has that brilliant argument about, he thinks that the book of Revelation should be looked at sort of like we look at a political cartoon. Mm-hmm. That is, it's all symbolic. And he describes that story where, supposing in 2900 they dig up the pillar in New York City and they find a newspaper in it, and it's got this picture of a tiger standing on its back legs fighting with an elephant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say, well, this is all the futurist says this proves there's tigers and elephants roaming in America in the 19th century. 20th century.
Yeah.
And the continuous historical says, no, what it proves is there was these organizations called circuses that traveled around with tigers and elephants that were trained animals. And the truth is, the tiger's not a tiger. It's a representative of Tammany Hall, and the elephant's not an elephant. It's a representative of the Grand Old Party. And the truth is about the battle going on between them to gain control of New York City. And that's what
the picture exactly represents to the first
person. Yeah, right. And that's what it represented to people when it was written. And that helps to explain this value of the thing to the people in the first century, I think. What did you think about the day for a year principle? Did you do any study about that?
I read a lot about it, but I didn't really come to a settled view on it. I know that it's been held pretty extensively. You know, on the day for a year principle, one interpretation has the millennium lasting 360,000 years.
That's Hiram Christopher.
And so I don't know. It seems hard to prove, even with the Old Testament prophecies they refer to that are definitely a day for a year, whether or not it should be applied consistently that way throughout the scriptures, I don't know.
Well, you know,
I would rather kind of take a symbolic view that, you know, it lets a set period of time and, you know, it's a lengthy period and so forth. But
looks to me like it's difficult to take it. I mean, it only happened twice in the Old Testament, Numbers and Ezekiel. It looks to me like it's difficult to take that principle and just apply it across the board to prophecy without
because
some
there are
indication.
Other prophecies that speak of days and they mean days and years and not years, right?
Raymond.
Thanks, Frank. Did you read Homer Haley's book? Just wondering where you would put him in there. Pardon?
I didn't read that one.
That's a good book to read because it fits down there, bottom some place. Another question I had was about the preterist viewpoint. Or generally speaking, why would you think, explain to me again, why would you think that the book of Revelation would have to have a direct, well, let me put it this way. About the third category, relevance to following generations.
Right.
What kind of relevance are you looking for? Relevance are you looking for there? Is it a direct relevance, indirect, subjective, or is it a relevance that we put on it looking back from a later date? How do you judge that relevance?
Yeah, that sort of gets back to what Brian was talking about. I'm not sure exactly how you would judge the relevance, but I think there needs to be fulfillment. If the book is going to be relevant to the following generations, like all the other New Testament books are, I do think there needs to be some fulfillment, but I'm not sure exactly how to go about proving, you know, that this is that. Like I said about, you you know, the Russian Orthodox Church and the Russian government. You know, that's a possibility, but I don't know that we, in our vantage point, can say, well, this is what's happening, although it does look like you've got a civil power joining with a religious power, a false religious power, to suppress the truth.
That's not exactly what I'm asking.
But
maybe it is. Relevant. So you would say that relevance to following generations means we have to find something in Revelation that applies to our generation.
I would think so. I don't know that there would necessarily have to be in every generation, but I think the possibility has to be there. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, maybe the beast will not be exerting his power during a particular generation, but that doesn't preclude the possibility that he will rise again and begin to do that.
I guess I'm thinking of relevance in a different sense.
Yeah.
In the sense
is
that...
Is it direct, or did we just learn from the book? Is that
right, because there's lots of books in the New Testament that
right.
that deal with problems in that day and time that have relevance to us today, because they indirectly teach us how we should act today, or how we should respond to situations today.
Right. Well, I think that that's basically the relevance I'm looking for, but if the book primarily teaches that this Satan is going to exercise his power through certain forces of evil in John's day, then the relevance will be the same when similar situations arise. Although it definitely teaches us too whether or not those forces are at work exactly in our day. It's a hard question to answer. I'm not sure that I'm doing
well,
a good job.
That is a category, of judging. You know, I can see the sense in that category, but I think what I'm driving at is for instance, I don't necessarily defend the preterist viewpoint, but if we say it doesn't have relevance, it might be some subjective, indirect relevance that it has today, because we learn from the victories and the triumphs of Jesus.
At the very least, we should receive comfort and hope, because
so
righteousness triumphed back then, no matter what happens now, we can be confident. I see what you're saying.
So there is some relevance there, clear relevance there. Explain to me.
I guess I'm just looking for more direct relevance.
Explain to me then. Just briefly, because I didn't quite grasp what you were saying about historical background. Can you just summarize that for a second?
Yeah, again? The historical background method, it basically blends these two views right here.
But in what way? In what specific way?
Now, specifically, the historical background method is going to take the preterist view with reference to the people John first wrote to.
Uh-huh.
So it is going to find specific, direct fulfillment in the Roman Empire and the persecutions under Domitian and the eventual overthrow. When they read the book of Revelation, that's what they're going to see primarily. They're going to say, this is what it meant exactly to the Christians that John wrote to first. And then he says that's not only the only application, because we can find relevance in our day, and he does this through this idea of the philosophy of history, that any time these same Satan working in these same ways, we can find relevance and, apply the visions to those things that are going on.
Wouldn't a preterist say that too? Wouldn't he say that?
Taking a limited view of preterism. The pure preterist pretty much says it was done when the visions were fulfilled, and they're not going to reoccur in history. Now, we can learn from them, but they're not going to reoccur. Now, the pure philosophy of history says there is no definite primary situation addressed. They just recur here, there, and everywhere. Now, those are the two pure viewpoints, but you will not hardly ever find a commentator that absolutely holds purely to that, because it's pretty hard to do, really. Because everybody wants to find some fulfillment for us, and so a pure preterist view is hard to take, and a pure philosophy of history view is hard to take, because it seems so clear that John is addressing the problems of the Roman Empire and so forth that was being inflicted on the church. So,
one other question.
Yeah. Does that help?
Yeah, it helps me understand what you're saying. So do you believe that Revelation is giving us in any way some broad swaths of epic history, or is it purely talking about events that happened then that we can see repeated today? In other words, to get specific, do you think there has ever been an epic that we could generally broadly call a millennium, or that there will be a little season, or do you think that those are periods that were repeated, or that they were periods that were fulfilled in the Roman government?
That's a real good question. I'm really not sure about what I think about the millennium, to be honest. It seems like only the futurist view is absolutely dedicated to a premillennial view and premillennial only, although there are a few that even hold postmillennialism. But now you can find people in each school that hold to one of the other views of the millennium. Some say it's the entire church age. Some say it's a golden age, you know, of the church prior to the coming of Christ. And
I was just wondering what it would be from the standpoint of the fifth position.
Yeah, I'm not really sure I can answer that. I'm not that schooled in the interpretations of that particular section.
So, I think you'd enjoy reading Haley's book. I wouldn't agree with it completely, but Haley has a real good, you know, defensible position about.
I heard Alan preach at New Year's that you could know what the millennium was not without knowing what it was.
There's lots of people that want to know what the millennium is, though. That's
the problem. No, that's the problem.
Questions?
I just wanted to say something about the date for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Alan that it couldn't be taken all the way across the board. But it is in prophecy, a date for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if it had its beginning before John and continues, well, then it could be a date for a year. Because the Bible says the law and the prophets are till John. So we can count a day for a year as long as it had its beginning. But outside of that, we have to find a different means of interpretation. And of course, I found another one that I use in my book that you'll read about.
All right. After I get that money.
Like the 3.5 days. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So,
right.
It'd be a long story, so I don't want to take the time. But I think that's 3.5 centuries because the Bible was printed in 1611. And take 3.5 years. Let's see. Start out in 1609 through 11. And so the 3.5 years, I think it's 3.5 centuries. You have to go into the Douay when it was come in 1909 and 1910. And then after that, the King James came in. And so I think the 3.5 years there is 3.5 centuries.
I appreciate that perspective. I'll admit I'm thoroughly unschooled on that point. So,
Frank, I think one thing that needs to be pointed out is that in outside of the book of Revelation, in the Old Testament, and for that matter in other New Testament prophecies, all prophecy has always been tied to specific historical events. It was not given to forecast history, or to forecast events, but it was tied to specific events, and the purpose for that was so that when people saw it fulfilled, they could know that God means what he says.
Right.
That being the case, I think that's true in the book of Revelation too, and I think that that is why the preterist view and the application to the first recipients, that is that basically the book is talking about the Roman Empire, is vitally important. It it needs to be talking about some specific historical event. That's the problem with the philosophy of history view. It's not talking about a specific historical event. It's out of the nature of Bible prophecy. And however, I also think that it was characteristic of the prophets to be giving a prophecy of some future event pegged to an actual thing that would occur and would later be called history. But then they would give a telescopic view of something in the distant future, too. Like when Isaiah prophesied of the Babylonian threat to the north 150 years later, or when Isaiah prophesied of Jesus 750 years later, and so on. Those are telescopic views jumping a long way ahead. And I think in the book of Revelation that the end time, 20 through 22, is a telescopic view to the end of time. And maybe that will help right. some in determining a few things about the millennium and the little season and so on. And I don't think that does any damage to the historical background or the preterist view, either one. But prophecy's always been tied to specific historical events.
Yes, and it also seems to me that when those events come to pass, they're always pretty clearly known. I mean, you can take the prophecies given about Christ in the Old Testament and see their fulfillment clearly in the New Testament. And that's another problem the continuous historical view seems to have, is that the fulfillments are really not all that clear, which is sort of proven by the fact that there's so much divergence even within this school of thought concerning what constitutes the fulfillments of those prophecies. So that's just an aside.
Right.
Somebody can disagree with me if they want to.
After I sat down, I sort of felt like we'd left it at a brink, you know. but what you said, Alan, is sort of what I had in mind of saying about the sort of millennium and the little season, you know, is that there's a possibility that the book is, I think it's clear, isn't it, Frank, that you start at the beginning of the book somewhere in the sixth or seventh chapter, there is a progression from one end to another.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I think
there is a progression of events, although some events might be seen as a regression mm-hmm. and then stepping forward again. But there is a progression from some point in time to the end of time.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
And that when you get to the end of time, if you want to work backwards, you can do that too. If you want to work backwards from the end of time in Revelation chapter 22 and see that preceding the end of time, there's going to be some broad period of peace where Christ will reign, and then there will be a season of persecution, and that will be a historical event that will precede the coming of Jesus. And we may not know all the events that lead up to it, and we don't necessarily need to know, because as you started out to say at the very beginning, the book is a book of consolation, and that's really what it's most its greatest relevance to us today is it's a book of consolation showing that Jesus Christ will be triumphant.
Yeah,
and
I believe
there's no
that
question
too.
About that. And so we don't need to look at, you know, there's two ways of looking at Revelation. One is a form of apologetic, to be able to say the truth about Christianity is true because we have all these prophecies that are fulfilled. And we can point at a certain period in time when all these prophecies were fulfilled. But that's not really the purpose of the book of Revelation. It wasn't to validate their faith or verify it. It was to give them consolation.
Exactly.
And so we can gain the same purpose today. We don't have to use it as an apologetic to say Christianity is true because all these events happened just as they were prophesied to happen. But instead, we take it as a book of consolation.
Right. I believe that every individual should be able to read the book and gain a lot of comfort from it. And
at the same time, there are some epics that it talks about. Right.
I think very good points.
I just wonder if
we could learn something from the Old Testament prophecies. You know, when Christ was prophesied in the Messiah, even the men that wrote those prophecies didn't understand them. The inspired prophecies were not understood by those people who wrote them. They wished that they understood. Daniel even asked some questions. The Lord said, no. And I wonder now then, the thing is, when it was fulfilled, look at, they knew something beautiful was coming. They knew something wonderful was going to happen. They knew a Messiah was going to come. But really, they didn't understand it until it actually happened. And I wonder if that isn't a lot in Revelations, that now then, when it did happen, they said, the Lord told us so, you see.
Yeah.
The Lord said this, the Lord said. So maybe sometimes we're trying to look into the future too difficult. And we know something wonderful, and we know about eternal life and about the Lord's coming and judgment and all these things. But I wonder sometimes if we don't try to understand it. In other words, not realizing the Lord didn't intend for us to understand it. That maybe we know we will in the future.
Yeah. Well, I hope he doesn't intend for me to understand every bit of it, because that's going to be a problem.